Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and editor of the Business of Government magazine. Now more than ever, the U.S. Navy depends on information and technology advantages to help keep the peace, fight, and win, and come home safe. Information management and the technology that enables it weave together to form a value chain that has as its end the conveyance of knowledge and data, with the ultimate purpose of providing the warfighter the ability to make informed decisions. The U.S. Department of the Navy's Chief Information Officer plays a key role in making all this happen by ensuring a secure, efficient, mission-aligned, and accessible IT operation and infrastructure across the entire Navy enterprise. CIOs continue to be called upon to deliver more innovation, better performance, more return on investment, and an enhanced customer experience, all while protecting critical systems from a rapidly expanding set of threats that continue to morph and become more sophisticated. So how is the U.S. Navy CIO doing just that? What are the IT priorities for the U.S. Department of the Navy? How is the Navy leveraging mobility solutions to meet its evolving mission? And what is the U.S. Navy doing to enhance its IT security across the enterprise? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Rob Foster, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of the Navy. Rob, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me here today.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Jimmy Norcross.
Thank you so much.
So, Rob, let's start off with some basics. Would you describe the mission of your office and how it supports the overall mission of the U.S. Navy and the DOD?
Absolutely. So, from the Clinger-Cohen Act is where the authority of a CIO is derived. My office is responsible for issuing out policy across the Department of Navy, which includes the Marine Corps and the United States Navy. And that's essentially to have an enterprise approach to both policies and resource decisions on a strategic basis.
Can you give us a sense of the scale of operation for your office in terms of how it is organized, the size of its budget, number of FTEs, and your overall footprint across the DOD?
Sure. I think it would be worth starting off with maybe the Department of the Navy and kind of going from
Absolutely.
That down to my office. So Department of Navy is about 900,000 personnel. That's active duty, reserve, civilians across the Navy and the Marine Corps. The budget for that entire department is about $169 billion on an annual basis. The IT spend is approximately $8 billion for FY16. We have about 283 ships that are commissioned, 124 installations. Those ships and submarines and planes are all deployed throughout their cycle of deployment. So we have an operational component, we have a shore-based component, and then we have a support side. And that's the size of the Department of the Navy, which I think is important to understand the scope and scale. My office, which does policy, is a 50-person organization, and we do overview the $7 billion IT spend as it's rolled up across the entire Department of the Navy.
So Rob, to expand on that a little bit, could you talk about the roles and responsibilities you have as the Department of Navy's CIO for our listeners?
Sure. So from my office, and I kind of break it down from those 50 people, which aligns directly back to the responsibilities. So I have a director for cybersecurity, and that cybersecurity director is focused on the policies associated with cybersecurity and ensuring that we're following those department-wide. We also have an enterprise infrastructure organization under me, and we focus on that side about the NMCI, the data center consolidation, things like that. I have an organization called IT Analysis and Internal Controls. Major focus there is improved efficiencies, portfolio management, as well as the financial audit that we're focused on and audit readiness. Privacy and information sharing is one of my areas that I have, and we're focused there on privacy, Social Security reduction. We're talking about knowledge management, FOIA, civil liberties in that group. And then I have a strategic spectrum policy shop. And one of the major areas that we have is Spectrum Reallocation Fund in the Department of Navy. And that fund's about a $1.5 billion fund. And it's used, again, to take our weapon systems and migrate them out of the spectrum that has been sold.
So, Rob, regarding your responsibilities and duties, what are the top, say, three challenges you face? And how have you sought to address those challenges?
So I think based on some of my earlier discussion, I think one of the challenges would be working across the scope and scale of the department through policies to ensure that my objective in ever issuing a policy is to enable the mission of the Navy, not to be an impedance. So one of the challenges is, do we have policies that are potentially enabling the mission or possibly disabling the mission? So I don't mind canceling policies that have been issued 5 to 10 years ago that are not up to date with the current policies that need to be in place to deploy technology. So that's, I think, a challenge, number one. Number two, I think it would be the priorities and the initiatives across the entire Department of the Navy as well as the Department of Defense, aligning those both from an acquisition time frame, a funding time frame, and then a mission time frame. So that's a complicated discussion across multiple stakeholders. And then lastly, I think making information, we have a lot of information across the department, making that information at the right level, accessible, visible for decision makers to make timely and accurate decisions.
Rob, thank you. And along with those challenges, I'm sure you've come across some unanticipated and unexpected surprises as well. To what extent have you been surprised, and what have you seen in that regard since becoming the Department of Navy CIO?
So, Jimmy, I think one of the biggest ones was spectrum management. So in my previous roles and in my previous life, I wasn't as aware of the impact of spectrum on both weapon system. I knew it existed. Mm-hmm. I knew it was there. But the international activity along spectrum, it is something that doesn't have borders. It has a significant value to the commercial space, and it has a significant engagement across, in this case, the Worldwide Radio Conference, which is a UN of UNs. It's the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, which is underneath the UN. And when I went to a Worldwide Radio Conference, I was amazed at the discussions about things in the area of spectrum. So both there's a CONUS aspect for the United States, and then there's an international aspect for both training and operations. And that is a very complicated area.
Oh, no, that's very interesting. I want to shift the conversation a little bit more to about you. Could you describe your career path for the listeners and what brought you to your current leadership position as the Department of Navy CIO?
So I was a military officer from 85 to 2007, Naval Supply Corps officer. I had opportunities to work on, of course, some ships in the functional areas. I was an acquisition contracting officer for a while. I was a special operations logistics officer out in the OCONUS side of the house, and did some contingent contracting as well. Then I went to graduate school. I had the opportunity to get a master's in information technology management at Navy Postgraduate School. Followed that up by a couple of shore-based activities and payback tours and software process improvement and resource management. And I retired from Defense Logistics Agency in 2007, where we were rolling out an ERP, and I had a small portion of that as a project and program manager. From there, I had an opportunity to come back into the government and serve as a civilian, which I really appreciated because it was an ability to lead, manage, and shape and contribute from a government side as well, just not with the uniform. I worked at Department of Homeland Security, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement from 2007 on to 2013, where I was a program manager for a short period of time and the deputy chief information officer there working at ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement. And from there, I moved on to the Health and Human Services Department as the deputy chief information officer during the 13 through 15 timeframe. And then from 2015 in June, I've actually reported back to the Department of the Navy, which is a real homecoming for me. I see a lot of wonderful friends that I've worked with in the past. The mission is much more complex from where I sit today, from where I sat in uniform, because I'm seeing it at a different altitude. But it's very much interesting. I love my job, and I'm very passionate about what's going on.
So, Rob, I want to get a sense of your leadership style. Would you outline your key leadership principles and perhaps illustrate for us how you have applied them during your career? And more importantly, what characteristics make an effective leader?
Sure. So I think people that come from the military, they get a lot of leadership characteristics and traits from those that they've served with. And it's very difficult to, in some cases, articulate it. But I've got a few reference documents, I think, that help shape some of my thoughts. And General Powell was a wonderful leader. He had a primer. It's the leadership primer. And you can Google it. It's about 18 leadership rules. It boils it down to some very interesting aspects. And if you look at those, I think they have applicability to leadership going forward. There was 108 Skills of Natural Born Leaders, which was a book by Warren Blank. I was able to take a course with him. I found that very, very helpful. There's a book out there called Collaboration by Hansen, mm-hmm. And that was a very good book, and that was also co-authored, I think, when Good to Great, which is another great book. And then I've combined all of those things, plus my leadership styles, and I have a Rob's Rules for Life and Business, and I've got about 22 of those rules that I post on my wall, and many of the folks that I've worked with in the past have those, I guess, portrayed out so that they can look at them. But I think the principles are basic, and I mean, I'm not saying you learn this in grade school, but I think if you empower somebody, that gives them fulfillment. I think if you hold them accountable, that gives them the third rail to operate in. If you have visibility in the sense that you're portraying what needs to be done and it's not hidden, then that leads maybe some command management for peer approval. The collaboration is nobody does anything on their own, and if somebody takes credit for something that they did, and not share that, I think that can be toxic. And then the last one, which I think encompasses it all, is trust. And I think you have to trust your people, and you have to hold them accountable. You have to give them the empowerment to do their job. And really, as a certain point in your life when you become a senior leader, your objective is to remove all the roadblocks that those folks have and just let that unbridled energy go forward.
What is the U.S. Navy's information technology strategy? We will ask its CIO, Rob Foster, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.